Amen. Over this summer, we have been talking about the idea of being released from the things that hold us back and being released from the things that keep us from moving forward. And I'm so excited that football season is starting up again. Wore my jersey this morning because for the Seahawks and for Pete Carroll and for all of us that were devastated by the Super Bowl last year, it is time to be released from that devastating ending. So it's time to move on. We're going to move forward. It's going to sting for a while that we were that close to a championship. But with some time and with some more games and another run at a Super Bowl, hopefully we'll all be released from that moment. So as a church, we want to help you recover from that and help the possibility of being released from last season. So on September 20th, the Seahawks play the Green Bay Packers at 5:30. And so leading up to that, we are going to have a tailgate party. So the way it's going to work is we've hired a catering company. They're bringing in pulled pork and pulled chicken sandwiches. We're going to have potato chips. We're going to have coleslaw. We're going to have sodas. We're going to have games and contests on the backfield. We're going to give away prizes like Seahawk flags and car decals and temporary tattoos and oh, and some tickets to a game in the future. So, because here's the deal. All of us, we need to be released from last season. And even bigger than that, you know some people. You have some friends. You have some neighbors. Maybe even family that need to be released from last season. And so, you need to plan to be here for the tailgate party, but you even more than that, you need to be planning on who you're going to invite to that. It's going to be a great time. We'll have our regular services in the morning, but then right after second service, we'll have our tailgate party. Can you hear me better? So normal services, we're going to have an amazing time just in service, and it'll be a great time, but then the tailgate party will be afterwards. If you're inviting people and they're like, I don't really like church, you say, just come to the tailgate party. That's cool. We don't care. But be aware of that. On August 30th, we're going to start giving away tickets for you to use as an invite tool. So like it's a party, you got to have a ticket to show up. Not really, just telling you that. And so we'll give you tickets and you can use those to invite people to be a part of that tailgate party. We are looking forward to that process. But this morning we want to continue to talk and look at the idea of grace and ultimately how you and I can be released from the things that hold us back and hold us back in the decisions and the choices that we've made and be released from those things and then move forward. And over the first couple of weeks, what we've looked at is what grace will release us from. And I want to quickly look at what grace is again. God's grace is his investment in our lives. So in your life and in my life, when we need God to meet a need, it's out of his resources, it's out of his abilities that God gives of himself and makes an investment in our life. When you and I need compassion in our lives, it's God who provides it out of his resources, out of his abilities. He invests in us and extends compassion into our lives. When we are in need of forgiveness, when we need something in our life to release us from the choices that we make, it's God who provides out of his resources, out of his abilities. He makes an investment in our lives and extends forgiveness. And the greatest demonstration of that was the fact that Jesus would send his own son, or that God would send his son Jesus to die for us. To die, to pay the punishment that you and I deserve for the sin in our lives. Sin deserves death. That's the punishment that it deserves. And we define sin as any time that you and I break relationship with either God or with another person through the choices and the things that we say or the things that we do. Anytime we break relationship, that's sin. And it deserves death. And Jesus came and he died and he paid for that debt. And that was God making an investment in your life, making an investment in my life. That's grace. And God blesses us and he provides for us. And anytime he gives us more than we need, that's God making an investment in our life. And when God sends people into your life that enhance your life and make your life better, that's God making an investment in your life and putting people there. And the reason that it's grace is because God has absolutely no obligation to make an investment in your life. God has no obligation to make an investment in my life. But God graciously responds and uses what is his, uses what is available to him, and then improves our life and invests in us. And what's so amazing about God is that even when you and I are at our very worst, even when we are completely messed up and floundering and struggling, God sees the potential in us and sees the potential in what we could be and who we are, and he makes an investment in our lives to the possibility of what could happen. God's grace makes an investment Because he sees the possibilities. And the fact that he does see the possibilities and he does make that investment is a great sign for you and I to see that there is something amazing that we can be. And God is ready to make that investment. And one of the most amazing things about God is that he never misses a good investment. So he invests in you because he realizes that's a great place to put his resources and his abilities. He never misses a great investment. I recently heard about a church where the pastors were approached by a guy in the church and their chance to make an investment. He had an investment idea and he wanted to sit down with the pastors and tell them about his investment opportunity for them. And probably all of us have been approached by somebody that has a good investment opportunity, right? Maybe they got a tip on a stock, or maybe they got a new business, or they've got an investment tip on some education, or on a Tupperware, or on an Avon, or maybe they got an investment on the surefire horse at the racetrack, right? And we're like, there's times where somebody says, "Hey, I got an investment for you," and sometimes it's wise, and other times we hear it and we're like, "Oh, that's crazy. That is flat. That is not going to happen. That is a very poor investment of my dollars and my time." And so this guy, he schedules a meeting, and the pastors finally let him in. And so they start having this conversation, and this guy starts making his pitch about his idea. And the whole time he's talking to these two pastors, they're like, "This is ridiculous. This is never going to work. What is this guy even talking about?" So eventually, the two pastors, they can't really say that in front of the guy, but they can kind of tell, "We're not giving this guy any money. We're not giving him any time. We're not supporting what this guy does." And so the two of them slowly work and dismiss the guy out of their office, and they close the door, and then they have a really good laugh. See, the guy's name was Neil Clark Warren, and he had this idea that he was going to use the internet to help individuals find other individuals that would be a really good match for them that they could potentially then date and marry. And eventually this guy, who was actually Dr. Warren, found some other people to help him launch and invested in his idea called eHarmony. Today it makes great sense. You know, when he was telling these pastors, they're like, "Nobody will ever do that." This morning it's so common and it's great. It's great. You know, you can find your spouse online. You can line things up. You can check it out. It's a great opportunity. And these pastors couldn't see beyond what their limits were. They couldn't see the potential of what was possible, and so they weren't willing to invest. But God never misses a chance to invest. They missed out on being a chance of something that would change thousands of lives and become a very useful tool for many, many people. But God sees the potential in us, and then he graciously invests his resources into our lives. This isn't going to be the primary verse we're going to look at this morning, but I want to just quickly look in 2 Peter and see some of God's investment in our lives. 2 Peter is a book towards the end of the Bible. All of the scriptures on the screen. It's also in your message notes. But this is what God says to us, or what is God's grace to us. It says, "By his divine power, God has given us everything we need for living a godly life. We've received all of this by coming to know him, the one who called us to himself by means of his marvelous glory and excellence. And because of his glory and excellence, he has given us great and precious promises." This verse, again and again and again, reveals God's investment in us. His divine power, the fact that he extends that to us, is an investment. His marvelous glory, his excellence, his precious promises. Try that. Precious promises. I butchered that all morning in precious promises. Anyway, however you say it, it's amazing. And God invests it in our lives so that ultimately we can experience life in the most incredible way possible. And when you and I decide to follow Jesus, all of that is extended to us. And all of that is extended to us not because of anything that we've done, not because somehow we've stumbled onto the secret code of do's and don'ts, or we've earned God's attention. We've been made right because of what Jesus has done. And so then through God, because of what Jesus has done, he then extends us his grace and all of these remarkable things. And grace is this unbelievable choice that God makes, and he decides that you and I are worth his investment. And he's worth the greatest resource that he had, the thing that he valued the most, his son. And so he invested the life of Jesus for us. Now, I want to start to make a shift this morning. I want this morning for us to begin to recognize how amazing grace is and what it is that God has given us and the investment that he's extended. And it'll help us understand what it is that we've received from God when it comes to grace. But I want you to now begin to talk and understand what it is that as that grace begins to be real in our life, this transformation that begins to take place in our lives, which will ultimately get us to the place where we now begin to extend grace in response to what we've received. I'm sure we've all experienced the idea of paying it forward, right? Where somebody does something kind to us, and then it begins to draw out of us a desire to be kind back to them or be kind to another person, right? Somebody comes along and they pay you a compliment, and it begins to create this thought in your mind, man, I need to find a way to compliment them, or I need to find a way to compliment somebody else, or I need to respond based on what I've received. We've all heard the stories about somebody in the drive-thru at Starbucks, right? They pull up and they're like, I'll pay for my drink and I'll pay for the person behind me. And then what happens? That next person pulls up and they're like, hey, your drink was paid for. The person in front of you paid for it. And they're like, oh, well, I'll pay for the drink of the person behind me. And then all of a sudden this ripple effect begins to take place as people receive grace. They get something they didn't deserve. They didn't even ask for it. They hadn't done anything other than order a drink. And now all of a sudden this ripple effect takes place in the cars and all these different people are extending grace to the person behind them. And grace begins to extend to another person that's made, because somebody made an investment in one individual, now that person begins to make an investment in somebody else. And the individual that's received an investment is now motivated to make an investment in another person. And as you and I begin to recognize the grace that we've received from God, as we begin to sense the investment that he's made and that he continues to make in our lives, the response that we should find out of ourselves is to begin to look for ways that we can then extend grace to other people. And one of the greatest ways that you and I can accomplish that is to realize that grace is demonstrated when we go beyond ourselves and invest in others. When you and I go beyond ourselves, that's what investment is. It goes beyond what could be good for me, and then I take what would be mine and I invest it in somebody else. And sorry, dads, but moms are the most remarkable examples of this. Moms go without sleep, and they deal with nasty laundry, and they make sure that food is available, and they kiss scraped knees, which is kind of gross the more you think about it. Like, oh, you're bloody, okay. Ugh, right? They proofread papers. Ugh. They deal with relationship advice. They maintain the family calendar. They taxi kids all around. They attend soccer games in the rain. They sit through a fifth grade orchestra concert. Whoa. Holy screeching cats. They clean toilets. They spend hours praying for the spiritual development of their children. They choose to discipline when ignoring would be even easier. And moms so often choose to go beyond what would be good for themselves, set aside what would make their lives easier, and then they give of their own resources and they invest in the lives of their children. We have an opportunity then to extend grace from what we've received, to think about others and go beyond ourselves and invest in those around us. That's the choice. Will we invest? Will we invest not just in ourselves, but out of the grace we've received, will we extend that? And grace then compels us and drives us to invest in others. And for churches, that's what happens. As a church, we begin to understand God's grace and we begin to sense that grace. And then the choice is to invest. And what that investment looks like in other people adjusts and it changes over time. And as culture changes and as situations change, the way that we invest in those outside of the church changes all the time. Because life changes and culture changes and the needs of those around us changes. And so over time, how we invest changes. It wasn't all that long ago in history that churches invested in stained glass windows. We covered ours up. And so you might think, oh man, we think that was a waste of money to invest in stained glass windows. It was a great investment at the time. If we can realize that stained glass windows, they were originally designed to communicate the story of God's grace and mercy. See, most people couldn't read at that time. Most people were unable to pick up their Bible, begin to flip through it, read the words, and discover God's forgiveness on their own. And so churches decided, hey, let's make an investment in those that are outside of our walls. Let's create these windows. Let's design these amazing stained glass images that will extend and share God's love to those in our community. They thought about people outside of themselves. It's really difficult for you and I to struggle to remember a time where it was hard to find where you wanted to go. Right? I don't even look up. I jump in the car and I start going wherever I'm going. And as I pull over, let me just... I pull over and I punch it into my phone. dang it, I totally got myself in trouble on that one. Before I leave the driveway, I punch it in my phone, and then I know where I'm going. Right, and the directions pop up on my phone. I get to go where I want to go. Well, prior to smartphones and GPS and the internet and MapQuest, if somebody wanted to find a church, if they wanted to find God, there were churches that were like, people are going to be searching for God. People are going to be searching for a community of people that are following Jesus. And if people want to find Jesus, if people want to find a church, how are they going to search for it? How are they going to locate the church? And so churches decide, you know what we're going to do? We're going to invest in something that doesn't make sense, doesn't help the members at all. It doesn't make life any better for those of us in the church. Let's spend a bunch of money and let's build a steeple. Let's get it way up in the sky so that when people in town are like, I got to get to church. How do I get to church? They can look up in the sky. They can find the highest point. And then the steeple would guide people to a place where they would discover a relationship with God. We don't need a steeple anymore. We don't need stained glass windows anymore. But it doesn't mean it was a bad investment at the time. So what we at Silver Creek have to do is we have to continually be looking and challenging and responding to go beyond ourselves, to get past the things that we think, oh, this is how we should do church, right? It worked. No. We want to look at how can we do things that will invest in others? How do we go beyond ourselves? How can we wrestle with and consider how do we invest in those that are outside of the church beyond ourselves? And the greatest thing that you and I can begin to do is to begin to look, okay, if we're going to make an investment in those beyond ourselves, how can we make that investment long outlast us? And today what I want to communicate, I'm going to attempt to say it as clear as I can right at the beginning so you know what it is that I'm trying to say. And then I'll make my attempt to kind of define it. But if you and I want to invest in the thing that will have the most longevity, ultimately the investment that you and I have to make that will have the most dramatic impact is we have to choose to invest in the next generation. Oh, man, it's tough to invest in the next generation and get anything from it. It's pretty tough, right? So we have to begin to look at how do we do that? And so I want to look at a story this morning that I think can begin to help us understand what it looks like to invest in the next generation. There's a story in the book of Acts, and the funny thing about a story in the book of Acts is that Acts is the story of a bunch of followers of Jesus. So in the early days of the followers of Jesus, they're developing churches. They're out helping spread the message of Jesus. And we come to Acts chapter 20 and we begin to read the story. It says this: on the first day of the week, we gathered with the local believers to share in the Lord's Supper. Paul was preaching to them. And since he was leaving the next day, he kept talking until midnight. Oh, goodness. We've got a preacher with lots on his mind. And he's leaving the next day. And so he's like, I'm going to tell you everything I can think of. Good news for you. We actually hold services in the morning before lunch, and we do it on purpose because there's no way that I would ever skip a meal. I get too hungry. I'm going to lunch, so I'm never going to preach towards midnight. To midnight. We just do it early. I'm not sticking through. No way. Keep reading. It says, the upstairs room where we met was lighted with many flickering lamps. As Paul spoke on and on and on and on and on, a young man named Eutychus, sitting on the windowsill, became very drowsy. Well, of course he's getting sleepy. They ate together. Doesn't say it. Maybe turkey. I don't know. They ate together. Now they're in the upstairs room where it's probably getting warm. Paul is talking on and on. The author is now mentioned twice. He spoke late in the night. He talked on and on and on and on. The lighting is dim. They got flickering lamps. It's getting late. Eutychus doesn't stand a chance. You just saw it. I start speaking, we turn the lights up. Before I came out, we were checking the temperature to make sure it was at a manageable level. We hold service early in the day when you're most alert. I try to speak for only 30 minutes. We pump you full of coffee, and some of you still get drowsy. This kid makes it in the Bible because he's sleeping in church. Most of you would be in. Let's not talk about your dad. I wanted to tell you a story about this guy when I was growing up who could sleep with his eyes open. It was amazing. I was so jealous. Okay. Finally, it says, Eutychus, he fell sound asleep and he dropped three stories out the window to his death below. I am not the best speaker. And there have been times where I have preached a real dud. I've gotten lost and I've missed things and I forgot. To my knowledge, to the best of my knowledge, I have never preached somebody to death. May have happened. I'm not aware that anybody has died in a service yet. Eutychus falls asleep in church and he drops to his death. A couple things I think we can learn from this part of the story about investing in the next generation and extending grace. And the first is this, is that grace always allows room to make mistakes. Eutychus fell asleep in church. There are some churches, this church, when I was growing up, you did not fall asleep. You would be ridiculed. You'd be told, you'd be told not to come back. Hey, if you're going to come to church, don't fall asleep. Don't even bother. I'm not wanting anybody to come to church and fall asleep. But honestly, who cares? Maybe we talk through some choices on how you can stay awake through service, you know, get to sleep earlier or take notes or sit up front. You know what? I'd rather have them fall asleep here. But it's really not that big a deal. It's just a mistake. But what about bigger times where somebody young like Eutychus maybe falls asleep in another area of life? Maybe there's an area of life where you have to make a decision and it's a big decision and they fall asleep. How will we as a church respond? Maybe somebody young in our church gets caught drinking underage. Maybe they go to some movie and it's just got horrible content. We're like, duh. Maybe they start sending text messages with inappropriate content. Maybe they go to school and they get in a fight and they get detention. What are we going to do? And I'm not encouraging poor choices. I'm not saying, just fall asleep. No big deal. We're not trying to make excuses. But when a mistake is made, the way that the church responds to a mistake, how the followers of Jesus, those of us that claim to follow Jesus, how we respond after the mistake will have the most drastic impact on somebody's life. And if there's natural consequences, we're not trying to dodge those. But instead, we're going to extend grace and quickly open our arms and say, come back. And if we really want to extend grace, not only will we open our arms, but we will open our arms and we will run and find them and pursue them and say, please come back. We love you. We are so concerned about your life. I got to tell you this funny story. It kind of makes sense. And this morning, our greeter at the front door was Aaron Voles. Okay? Our greeter, our rule is stay by the front door and say hi as they arrive. Guess what I saw Aaron do multiple times? All of a sudden, Aaron was gone and he was running down the sidewalk to give people a hug. What if somebody made a mistake in our community? What if a young person around our church made a mistake and rather than we're like, come back to church? What if instead, as soon as we saw that, we ran to them and we threw our arms around them and said, you know what? Grace allows you to make a mistake. Just come back. We don't care. Let's go. Let's move forward. Grace allows people to make a mistake. Young, old, we're just talking about young, but really, grace allows room to make a mistake. And even bigger than that, in this story, what we see is that grace won't settle for church missing the next generation. Pretty much everything about this service was designed for Eutychus to fail, right? That wasn't their intent. They weren't trying to set the kid up. They weren't trying to cause him to fall asleep and die. They weren't doing anything to prevent it. Nobody said, hey, come out of the window. Maybe we should turn up the lights. Maybe Paul should shut up. I didn't even think to say that. We will not be a church that is willing to miss the next generation. We will do everything that we can to avoid putting them to sleep spiritually. And we will go beyond ourselves and invest in the next generation to prevent them from dying spiritually. That includes students, that includes kids. As those of us in leadership are rapidly getting older and older, 20s and 30s. That used to be the 20s and 30s. Now I'm like, well, we got to invest there, right? Which means that I'm not going to tell you which ones. There are some songs that we play on a Sunday morning. I'm like, I am not excited about that song. It's not about me every time, most of the time. Our worship council is wrestling with some songs right now that we're going to be rolling out. You might not like them. You might not like them. And Grace will say, I'm going to give of myself. I don't like rap. And you might. And so we're going to do it. Because when we start doing rap, Rain won't fall asleep. You're like, ah! And the next generation won't either. There's no rap in the next set, just so you know. None. How about children's ministry? You know what? In children's ministry, we are always considering, how are we doing things? Some of you are not going to like this. As much as we want kids to leave on a Sunday morning being like, Mom, guess what I learned about Jesus? Not our goal. Ooh, whoa, really? No, you know what we want? We want them to felt loved by the teachers. Maybe they know that Jesus loved them. We want them to have left going, man, that was so enjoyable. Little four-year-olds aren't going to ever say that. We want them to have had an experience that is memorable and maybe even fun. I know that we're not supposed to say that in church, right? Don't use the F word in church, fun. Because when a kid walks out and they tell their parents what they learned about Jesus, there's not necessarily any excitement about coming back. That's cool they learned that about Jesus, but we get to tell them one time. But if they have a memorable experience, if it's something that they enjoyed, they're going to be like, Mom, take me back. Dad, take me back. I got to get back. That was so amazing. And now we get to tell them about Jesus again and again and again and again. Student ministry, we don't want to miss them. Students have so much access to technology, right? And sometimes we're like, oh, we got to leave technology out of it. We don't want to include it. We try and end up keeping stuff so ancient that our presentations miss. Students, they constantly have their phones in their hand, right? Constantly, their phones are out. We're not going to change it. So let's just embrace it, right? Their phones are going to be out, so let's use them. And Travis does this all the time. Hey, tweet what I just talked about. Tweet what I'm talking. Use it. Tweet, 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 whatever, right? So let's utilize it and be fine with students. If you're a student, if you have a phone, you could tweet the whole time I'm talking. Just whatever, go for it. You know that recently I heard the iPhone 6 has twice as much technology as the computer that sent the man to the moon. And so students utilize this to do important things like send 3,300 text messages a month. Right? Like, that's how we use the technology. But you know, 3,300 text messages, most of them are LOL or TW or YOLO or TGIF. I think that's just old people that use TGIF. But right, this is how students communicate. Students are used to having technology at their hand and interacting with their world, tweeting their thoughts, creating music, creating movies. They watch a show or they watch a performance and they respond in the moment to whether they liked it or not. So we might as well help them start to like it and respond to that. We'd better figure out how to do more than just preach and just say, hey, watch us do church. And then when you get older, you get to try it. No way. We got to make the things that we do for services for students not be dull. We can't be a church that will settle to miss the next generation. So this kid, Eutychus, he falls asleep. Story goes on. It says, Paul went down, bent over him, and took him into his arms. Don't worry, he said. He's alive. Then they all went back upstairs, shared in the Lord's Supper, and ate together. Paul continued talking to them until dawn, and then he left. Everybody stayed awake. Nobody wanted to die. Meanwhile, the young man was taken home alive and well, and everyone was greatly relieved. So Paul preaches a guy to death, which again, I'm proud to say I've never done. But I've also never taken a dead person and put him in my arms and then seen him come back to life. That'd have been a pretty exciting service, right? Eutychus, whew, dead. Nope, he's not. He's still alive. So what does this say about the next generation and how we extend grace? First is this. Grace will fight for the next generation, not fight against them. I love that in this story, nobody's yelling at Eutychus. Why didn't you stay awake? They just rushed to help him. They just responded to the situation. When we think about students, think about adults. People are so busy. So let's not fight it. Right? Like what we could do is we could offer multiple services throughout the week. And then we could help make people feel guilty. We could fight them and be like, you got to get to church. You got to get to church, and we could fight them and say, you got to get here, you got to be at a church. If you're committed to Jesus, you'll be here every time we open the doors. If this mattered to you, and we would fight, we could fight on that. That's a fight we will lose. Because students and adults will eventually just check out. So instead of fighting them on it, let's just instead fight for them, which means we have to be very intentional with every single thing that we offer. Extremely strategic with each attempt and being sure we know what we're trying to accomplish when we do get somebody's time. That's a fight. That's a struggle. That's a wrestling in preparation. We have to attempt and make sure that the resources that we're using, that we're handing people resources that will then allow them to go live out daily what they're hearing. We have to help families and begin to place families in a position where they're where the spiritual development is taking place. Church, we only get kids so often, and even if we had services every day, we get them for a little bit of time, and then the family has to help the spiritual development take place. So we're not going to fight on that. We're not going to be a church that fights people on what you wear to church and the style of music that you have to listen to and how you cut your hair and what color you're going to dye your hair and do you have tattoos on your body and what political party have you aligned with. We're not going to fight. We're not going to fight about being a traditional church and doing things traditional ways. We're not going to work. The lighting has changed in the room. Yep. The music volume changes. Yep. The decor in the building changes. Yep. We're not going to fight over it. We're just going to fight for the next generation. I'm not going to fight against them. We're going to fight and encourage them to take on ministry roles. We're going to say to the next generation, hey, why don't you try things we've never even thought of? We're going to fight for the next generation to try things and fail. And then we're going to embrace the failure, learn from it, and then we're going to move forward. And then notice what Paul does. Eutychus falls. Paul changes the level that he's at so that he can get to the same level that Eutychus is on. Eutychus happens to currently be dead and on the ground. So Paul comes downstairs. He bends over. He gets down to the same level that Eutychus is on. And what we need to understand is that grace motivates us to get to the level that's needed. Now, what I don't want to communicate in any way is that we have to get down to the level of the next generation. Just so happens Paul got down because he was dead on the ground. But there is no generation, there is no group, there is no age, there is no way of church doing church that has a higher value or a higher level than another. So what I'm saying is that grace just motivates us to get to whatever level we need to be on to help bring transformation to lives. To change the level that we're at, to invest in somebody else so much so that we'll change the level to ultimately make an investment in the next generation. And one of the strongest examples of that at Silver Creek is our family production called Fusion. We do Fusion October through May, and we do it once a month, and we gather all of us in one place. We do church together. And what Fusion is a little tough to understand until you see it. But it's essentially, many of you have seen it. If you haven't, it's lively music. It's hilarious drama. It's interactive dancing. It's creative elements. It's got lights. It's got teaching. It's got sound effects. It's got audience participation. And it's got volunteers of every age. And what happens at Fusion is important, but more than what happens is why Fusion happens. We're convinced people of any age can learn and enjoy Fusion. Here's the secret. The target, when we put together Fusion, the individual that we have in mind is a fourth grade boy. Our goal is to create an atmosphere that will be so engaging for kids that they won't want to miss it. And they're like, Mom, this kind of goes back to the Mom, I gotta bring my parents to church. Like, our vision is that there will be a mom sleeping on a Sunday morning and the kid's like, we gotta go, it's Fusion. And then because it's so amazing, it gives us repeated opportunity during these formative years to plant seeds and plant seeds and plant seeds about who God is and what God looks like and what a relationship with God and how it functions. And now because the entire family is in one place at the same time in the same production, it begins to stimulate conversations that otherwise would not have happened. And then when as a church we stop everything else and we just do Fusion, what does that communicate to a kid and a family? Oh, you're so important, we would change everything. Now, if you're not a fourth grade boy, no, doesn't look like we got many in here. What does that mean? That means it's going to take grace to go beyond ourselves, change our level to invest in kids. Grace will motivate us to adjust the level 7 Sundays a year for Fusion. Grace will motivate us to get to a level that creates the most high potential for presenting characteristics of God in a tangible way. And since most of us think like a fourth grader anyway, we'll be changed. But grace will impact a generation when we're willing to change our level. It will impact a generation that desperately needs us to care. And if you're not a parent of kids in that age, guess what? It's going to take grace to say, you know what? I'm going to go beyond myself and I'm going to invest in these young families. It'll be grace that motivates us to adjust our level of priorities for the future of the church. It'll be the motivation from grace that will say more than just, oh yeah, you guys can do fusion. Grace will motivate you to say, you know, I'm going to show up. I'm going to interact with the production. Maybe it's not even funny. Maybe Brent tries something and I'll laugh and I'll interact. And you know what? I'll tell people about it. I know some people in my life who either have a fourth grade boy or know somebody with a fourth grade boy or act like a fourth grade, right? Like, I'm going to tell somebody about this. Motivation will say, you know what? I'm going to show up and I'm going to attend because if I show up, my presence is going to say to the kids and the volunteers and the people that are willing to give themselves to it, I'm going to validate their willingness to serve in this. And my presence is going to say, hey, next generation, I care about you. And Fusion is going to kick off on October 4th, and we're going to have an incredible season. But it takes all of us saying, yeah, okay, I'm going to invest in this. Real quick, in the very short time I have left, let's just talk about what grace looks like in some tangible ways. When we've experienced God's grace and we've decided to extend it to other people, when we realize that the next generation is worth it, there's four ways I think it plays out most. And the first is this: financial investment. You're not going to be shocked to hear that nothing happens at church that's free, right? Lights and water and supplies and music and the mortgage and the paint take money. Ministry takes money. There's a cost. Pastors and staff have a cost. Fusion has a cost. Curriculum for kids has a cost. Dodgeballs for students have a cost. Coffee for Sunday mornings has a cost. Message notes and the paper we put them on, it all has a cost. But when we begin to see the value of investing, grace then leads us to take dollars that we could typically just spend on ourselves and the things that we want, and instead to say, you know what, I'm going to contribute to the church and the opportunity to transform lives. I'm going to fund that. That'll be my investment. Another aspect of grace and what it looks like is that grace will respond to opportunities to serve. Man, we have this incredible crew of people that consistently serve in student and children's ministry. But even with this amazing list of volunteers that we currently have, every single week, I see emails circulating as we scramble to try and fill all of the positions to make sure that we have all the staffing we need for children's ministry. Each week, Elizabeth and I, we sit down with our children's director, Mandy, and we sit down, and every single week, the conversation includes how we're short on volunteers. And we talk, you know, we talk about which person that's already volunteered this month can we go and talk into maybe doing one more Sunday. How amazing would it be if our conversation with Mandy started to center around, what are we going to do with all these volunteers? Man, I think we got too many workers. What if we can't find places for everyone? What if we can't schedule? There are people like, man, I'm not getting scheduled often enough. I would love that conversation. So here's the challenge. Don't make excuses. And don't talk about how maybe you've given in the past to children's ministry. My challenge is to each of you to begin to find ability to give 2 hours a month to children's ministry. I'm not a math wizard, but follow me on this. 2 hours a month times 12 months is 24 hours. So that's one day. Is that still accurate? So I'm challenging you to give 1/365 of your next year to the next generation. And I'm challenging you not because the church needs it. I'm challenging you because you see the value of investing in the next generation and the benefit of extending grace that you've received beyond yourself to others. Another aspect of grace and what grace looks like is that grace will celebrate what you don't understand. We are not going to do church the way every church does church. And sometimes that's hard to understand. Sometimes we're not going to understand why we would send money and resources to a church in El Salvador. Sometimes we don't understand. Sometimes we might not understand why we would try crazy things like a mechanical bull on a Sunday morning or a comedian or a zip line or a tailgate party. Why does a church need to do a tailgate party? Sometimes we just don't understand, but we should celebrate it. I can tell you the funniest thing has happened. We have this Bible quizzing thing in our church called Swap. It used to meet on Sunday mornings and a few kids would show up. Mostly mine and Elizabeth's. We forced them and a few others, right? So there was a few kids that would come. Not a lot, a few. And then we decided, we're like, okay, maybe we should move this to Sunday morning. I don't know. And I was like, this would be so boring. This is horrible. I'm a pastor. I usually work with students. I'm like, kids will be bored out of their mind memorizing the Bible. And I'm like, I don't know if this is going to fly. I'm just telling you what I thought. I didn't understand. And now we've added it to Sunday morning. And guess what's happened? The attendance has doubled. The excitement is growing. Kids are like, we got a quiz meet coming up. We got to get more kids to go to the quiz meet. We're hosting a quiz meet in January. I have worked at this church for 15 years. I don't know that we've ever hosted a quiz meet. I don't understand. Hey, I don't need you three helping me at all. Gee whiz. Just let it go sometimes. Let it go. Goodness, give me some grace and just extend kindness, goodness. So let's just celebrate. I don't understand you. I'll celebrate you. No, celebrate what we don't understand. And lastly, what grace looks like, it's a willingness to hand over responsibility. We are going to continually hand over responsibility. We're going to believe in people, that God will use them and that they have the ability to accomplish things beyond what they would ever think they could accomplish, and God will do amazing things through them. And guess what's going to happen? Mistakes. And attempts are going to be made and not work, and we're going to start programs, and sometimes it's going to work and sometimes it's not, but we're going to say, go for it, try it, let's give it a shot. And as a result, we'll have this army of volunteers and leaders that begin to grow because we hand them responsibility. Because the church's ability to impact our community and impact our world will be severely limited if responsibility is held by a select few. Our students were handed the responsibility of presenting talks out of the Bible at ISA, and guess what happened? They did an amazing job. We have this gal named Amy Hill. She creates all and produces all of the promotion and publications that we do, and she does an amazing, incredible job. And it doesn't happen because we hover over her and like, how's that? We just handed her the responsibility. Nancy Curl is handed the responsibility of making sure all of the slides and images that go up on the screen behind me and behind the band on a Sunday morning are done and ready to go. We hand her the responsibility, and she's remarkably diligent and reliable at the task. A large part of our crew that teaches and is involved in the classrooms on Sunday mornings are kids and students. We've handed them responsibility, they take it seriously, and they do an amazing job. And as a church, we are going to continue to hand over responsibility. And sometimes it's not because a person's ready. It's just because they have the potential to grow into it. Well, Paul preached on, and I did my best, but we're done. So real quick, my challenge to you, we do this every week, is what's your next step? What are you going to do based on what you've heard this morning? Each of us have received grace. How will you extend that grace? How will you invest in others? Maybe your next step is to allow yourself to fully appreciate the enormity of God's grace. Maybe your next step is to determine the investment in others is worth the cost. Maybe your next step is to commit to volunteering at least once a month, which takes about 2 hours, to make church better for the next generation. Maybe your next step is defend what doesn't make sense and cheer when it works and support when it fails. Band's going to come and play one last song. What is it that God's calling you to do this morning? How is He moving you to respond out of the grace that you've received, to extend and make an investment in others? Let's pray. God, thank you so much for this morning. God, would you allow us to be challenged and moved by your grace? God, not to feel guilted into it or pressured into it, but literally just to absorb and understand so much of your grace and how huge it is to just not be able to sit on that, but to respond and look for ways to invest in others. Thank you for this morning. In Jesus' name, amen.